And opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from LA, coming to you live from FEMA Region Number 6. Today is May the 26th, 2017. It is a Friday. We have a great, great show for you, I think, lined up. And I just want to thank you all for listening today, because you could be somewhere else, and we sincerely appreciate you being here. So we're going to get into today's show, but before we do that, we're going to do as we always do. We want to bring more attention to Black Talk Radio Network. Everyone, if you would please continue to donate to and support Black Talk Radio Network, and you can do that by going to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, and on the homepage there is going to be a place where you will see the donation prompt that's there. Please hit that, the helping hands, in so that this network can continue to do what it's been doing and what it needs to do in the future, because it doesn't get any corporate sponsors. It was created for you. It wasn't really created for any corporate sponsors. It was created for you. So it is incumbent upon you and us to take care of this so that it will be here, as we will definitely, definitely need it in the future. So if you would be so, if you would be so kind and to show a measure of your appreciation and to ensure that this network stays on air, please go to blacktalkradionetwork.com and give some of your financial energy so that this network can stay on air. Also, another way that you can support Black Talk Radio Network is by engaging in its social media outlet known as BTR Community. BTR Community is a social media platform where you can actually post things about yourself, your business, and everything that you could do in the other social media programs. Come on over to BTR, and you can find it also by going to www.btrcommunity, and it's only $24 a year, and that services everything, and is another way that you can protect this network. And I don't post anywhere else. It's the only place that I post, because it's more conducive to the overall agenda that we have going on here. So those are the ways that you can support BTR Community, and that's the way that you can support Black Talk Radio Network. Also, if you would like to acquire real money, and that being not a debt instrument, you can acquire gold and silver by going to Prosperity Mint, ProsperityMint.com. That's Prosperity Mint. Check out what's in inventory, then email info@prosperitymint.com and let someone know that you're interested in acquiring the precious metals, and someone will reach out to you to make sure that you are doing it correctly and just to assist you with the overall buying practice. And it's something very, very important that you need to know. And believe me, it's for your benefit. So make sure you email info@prosperitymint.com. Okay. Also, July the 1st, 2017, we will be having our Control Your Wealth seminar in Dallas, here in Dallas at the Dallas Library. And you can get your tickets at Eventbrite. Go there. Individual tickets are $300. Couple tickets are $550. And what is going to be on the agenda is an opportunity for you to learn and to control your wealth and some of the things that's going on and that's going to be happening now and in the future that you can start to leverage. The seminar is going to be sponsored by Prosperity Mint. We'll have a one-hour intro from Prosperity Mint, Trust and Foundations for 1 hour by Legacy Wealth Management. We'll be actually providing the Trust and Foundation portion. And then Prosperity Mint will be giving the first one of the precious metals classes, and that will be one of the four precious metal classes will be given there in person. Very, very important. And also, we will have a debriefing as to how we can collectively come together and some opportunities that you may want to be engaging in the future to develop other streams of income and just so many other opportunities that we all should be galvanizing with. And that's going to be in July the 1st in Dallas at the Dallas Library. It's the Central Library in Dallas, Dallas Public Library. So definitely that is something that you want to engage in. You could do that through Eventbrite. Is Control Your Wealth Seminar brought to you by Prosperity Mint. Okay? So with that being said, let's jump into, before we do that, one of the things I want to bring to everyone's attention is that right after Tando Radio Show today, for those of you that signed up in the Trade Coin Club with cryptocurrency, a lot of things that are happening. What we're going to do is we're going to have 10 minutes after Tando Radio Show goes off, we're going to have a conference call for all of those individuals that have signed up. And if you don't have the call-in number, it's the same one that was given to you for the first conference call that we had with this. And for those of you that have signed up since then, just text me, 951-790-8330, 951-790-8330 after the show. And then I will get you the conference code number, conference call number and code for you to jump in. We need to talk about some things. I know it's the long weekend. It's the holiday weekend coming up. So we just need to touch on a couple of very, very important things and some things that's on the horizon, some great, great things that we're going to be able to do collectively together, because I will be trading the cryptocurrencies, because the potential for this is really, really phenomenal. You know, it's pulled back from the high of $2,800 or $2,700, is now right around $2,200. So it's lost. And man, if you were able to trade on that that spike down, whew, that gained a lot for you. And we knew then, we said that, hey, it was going to be going down. So it just needs to get everything situated so you can be a part of this. Once you get everything situated, is only going to grow from there, because this thing is only going to grow. So that's where, come on, right after Tando Radio Show, jump on. And also, if you would like to join, text me, 951-790-8330, and we'll send you that, and then so that you can join. And all you have to do is you can sign up at rcryptocurrency.com. rcryptocurrency.com, and that's going to be to the Trade Coin Club. Sign up, fund it, and then get moving, and we're going to do some very, very phenomenal things there. So definitely looking forward to that. All right, so let's jump into what's in the news. A lot of good things was posted there in the news. I want to thank my man Roz for posting some really, really, really good stuff. Truly, truly appreciate you, bro. Thank you so much. And at any time, if you would like to jump in, if you'd like to jump into today's show, give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025, then hit star, I'll see you in queue. Today we're going to actually have a real good long documentary about 1977, and today's topic for today's show is how New York City's 1977 lights out blackout can help prepare you for the next fiscal blackout. That's going to be today's show. So I want you to see some things that happened there. We're going to jump into this really quickly. I'm going to run through what's in the news so we can get to this very, very important time is the essence. I want to just thank Strategic Melanin for putting that cluing me into that. One time we were talking about the blackout, and I was giving some of my personal experience, and she said she had just saw a documentary, and that should be a show. So greatly appreciate you, Queen. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. All right, so let's jump into what's in the news. There's a lot that's here. Won't be able to go through everything, but we're going to go through as much as we can. Here we go. My man, Roz. Oops. No, this last one before we get to that one. Last one. I got this one from ABC News. Chinese jet comes within several hundred feet of U.S. Plane over South Sea of China. Two Chinese J-10 fighters came within several feet of a U.S. Navy P-3 Orion over the South Sea of China on Thursday, local time. U.S. officials said the fighters flew 200 yards in front of the P-3 maritime surveillance aircraft with an altitude separating of 100 feet. Well, this comes one day. One, you see, the U.S. Navy, you shouldn't have your butt there, plain and simple. It's the South Sea of China. It's not the Atlantic, the Atlantic Ocean on the U.S. side, or the Pacific Ocean on the U.S. side, or the Gulf of Mexico. It's the South Sea of China. So, and this comes one day after they actually confronted another naval warship that was there. And P-3 Orions are sub hunters. That's what they're there for. They're actually trying to find subs, and they also do surveillance. So this is going to turn into something relatively soon. Next article. Raz posted this one. Terrorist philosophy. Psychologically. Excuse me. How terrorists justify carrying out atrocities to themselves. Check out that article. Next one. Raz posted this one. Herbal coffee recall containing same ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. Check out that article. Next article, Raz posted this one from Fortune. Bitcoin price surge. Are the governments behind it? Yes, 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 yes. And I said that a long, long time ago, because I remember when Mt. Gox was taken down, the U.S. government stole millions of Bitcoins. That's how I knew that Bitcoin was going to explode, because they were going to be the beneficiaries of it. So, yes, 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 yes. So, check out that. Next article, Raz posted this from The Telegraph. ISIL invades in the Philippines, Indonesia, and Malaysia, among foreign jihadists laying siege to cities. Check out that article, and that's going to have a lot of legs for other problems here. Next one from the Time magazine. John Boehner thinks President Trump's term has been a complete disaster. Check out that one. Raz posted that one. Next article is he's doing exactly what it was designed for him to do within the system. We all know that. Next one, Raz got this one from the BCC. Protest against Brazil's president turns violent. Next article, this one is from DW.com. I had nothing to do with this. This DW had nothing to do with me. This is actually Deutsche Welle. Cyber insurance market bound to explode for businesses. They're going to come up with cyber insurance. See, this is all a scam. And what are they going to continue to do? Make sure people get hit. And so the insurance company is going to be who? The actual hackers that are doing it. Man, don't fall for this crap. Next article from Cerebrally Naive Money that Roz posted in. Senators introduce a bill to hack the Department of Homeland Security. Next article, Roz posted this one from Moneyish. How to recover from the horrors of sending an email you shouldn't have. Check out that one. That's a good one, Rod. Next article from Rod sent this in from the Telegraph. Islamic State calls for an all-out war on the West at the start of Ramadan after the Manchester attack. Next article, Rod sent posted this one. Pence at the Naval Academy. The era of military budget cuts is over. Boy, they tripping. Next article, Rod posted this one. It didn't come up. It's from Forbes. The world is washing. Oh man, is wasting our. It won't come up. So Rice posted another article there. That one didn't come up from Forbes. And next article, I posted this one from. Got this one from Business Insider. Here we go. Oh shoot. Here's who would win if Russia and China and America all went to war right now. So we're going to take a look at this one later on next week. Next article from Cerebrally Naive Network. Rise posted this one. Seventh grader gets most likely to become a terrorist award. What? Ridiculous. Next article. Rise posted this one from NBC News. UPS has been slapped with a $247 million fine for shipping untaxed cigarettes. What does that tell you? They're going to be going through all packages. Next article from Rise the Verge. New bug allows any website to crash. Windows 7 or in Windows 8. Next article. This was from, I don't know what this one, Rise posted this one. It didn't come up. It was a video from Cerebrally Naive Network. So check out, go to today's Tando Radio Show page and check this out. Man, this thing was funny. I posted this one from YouTube showing celebrity figurehead Pump Chump pushing I can't remember one of the NATO members. I forgot. It's Macedonia, I think it was. Pushing him out of the way so he could get in the front. Man, this is so, and it's such a stage for this whole thing. And this is going to the untied states, the purge, ladies and gentlemen. This is hilarious how childish we have become. I'm talking about we because we've allowed ourselves to be maneuvered into these situations. But I think it's very important that we know this so that we can get away from this. And this is just buffoonery right here. It says everything. All the world is a stage. Next article. I can't see this one as well. Some dude was talking about there's a major crash going to happen. That is very true. Economic crash. Next article from CNBC. Trump calls Germany very bad threat to end German car. Trump calls Germany very bad. Threatens to end German car sales. So check out, this is, and my commentary on that is that currency wars, trade wars, shooting wars is the way it goes. We're past the currency wars. We are coming out of the trade wars. Now is going to go to shooting wars. So next article, this one, I got this one from the Market Shooter. The drug war has incentivized police to treat citizens like terrorists. Check out that article. I couldn't believe just the picture is ridiculous. Check out what's going on there. Next article from Reuters. China's central bank denies reports it told banks to deposit U.S. dollars. Check out that article. Well, no, it was U.S. dollars or dollars. Yeah, it was dollars. Check out next article from, this comes from ERE, is a European foreign circulation. Two Russian counselors expelled from Estonia. This is what happens when you get to war, ladies and gentlemen. They start expelling people. Next article from Yahoo. Trump pushes aside. Let me move this down. Montenegro's leader, that's who it was, Montenegro's leader, who called it natural. Man, this is crazy. Check out that article. Next article. This one, Rise posted this one. Yale UC studies finds extensive Facebook use decreases health and happiness. Yep, you could definitely see that. Rise also posted from Washington Post. U.S. death rate for Alzheimer's rose dramatically over 15 years. Why? It's the drugs, ladies and gentlemen, the drugs. Next article, this one came from chasegold.com. Arizona governor has signed, and we're definitely going to talk about this next week, has signed, Arizona government signs bill repealing state's capital gain taxes on gold and silver. Arizona knows what's up. As far as where we're going economically, it's going to a resource-based economy. So Arizona governor signs a bill to repeal state capital gains taxes on gold and silver. So that is going to have, that is going to do Arizona so much economic good. Next article, a new financial system is being born, digital currency. Next article is, Roz posts this one real good, and Roz said, Dave, speaking of interstellar mining for precious metal, yeah, because I was talking about that's why they're going into space. That's why they're going to the moon. That's why they're chasing asteroids and all these other things, is because the planet doesn't have any more silver, so they have to go into the the celestial bodies to get them, because you're not going to get any more. If more silver comes to this Earth, no one would be here living. NASA has plans to mine asteroids worth 10 quadrillion in metals. So check out that article. Next article. Roz posted this one, Wake Up, Five Stages of Awakening. So got to hurry up here because, okay, so because I want to start today's show. And then next article, Reuters, U.S. economy slowed. Let me just hold on. U.S. economy slowed less first quarter outlook. Excuse me. U.S. economy slowed less than expected in the first quarter. Outlook cloudier. So, and I like to say to that, I posted an old school video in there, some music, and I said this old school song sums up the above article. And it's just an illusion. So that was the song posted there. I never saw that video before. Kind of more than creepy and everything else. That stuff, and I think Roz had said something about it on there, and I can't see it. No, he did. I thought he did. So check out that. That's what's in the news. So what I want to do, everyone, is I want to talk about and jump into today's show. And today's show is we're going to take a look at the ninth, the July of 1977. I believe it was July the 16th or the 13th. It was July the 16th of 1977. There was a major blackout in New York City. So I want to go through a documentary that will kind of, yeah, it's July the 13th, excuse me, July the 13th, 1977, was a blackout in New York City. Very, very important, and I think that it's something that we all should be looking at, because the next one is coming, and when it comes, it's going to be very, very significant. So, and I think there's a lot of things that we can learn from it. If I could just get it to stop working, I would greatly... Thank you. Let me just fix this really quickly. And so I think it offers us a great opportunity to learn some things so that we could be better prepared, because the next blackout is not only just going to be of the lights, it's going to be of the economic system, and we need to be ready for that. So let's check out this documentary, sit back and enjoy. And then we will definitely come back to this. We're going to run this through the break. Oh, no, we'll run to the break and then come back. And then the last 20 minutes of the show, if there's any questions or comments, you can call in to 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025, and hit **, and it will show up. This was a PBS special that aired, and it was a documentary. So... And it's going to go over some of the journalists' views, shop owners, first responders, and Con Ed, and what happened on July the 13th in 1977. I was a very, very young child at that time. I was old enough to understand what was going on. I remember it was a hot, muggy July night. I know exactly where I was standing, and then all of a sudden, boom, all I heard was boom in New Jersey, and all the lights went out, and I couldn't see my hand in front of me, and it got eerily quiet. And I said to myself, I think I was about 9 years old. Yep, I was 9 years old. Yep, 9 years old. And I said, you know, 9 years old when ain't nobody around and it's just them. I was using all kinds of profane words because it was just, and it was so surreal because you couldn't see your hand in front of you. The only way that you were able to see is when cars came around. And at that time, it was no cars on the block. And then the car that did come on the block, because I lived in the project at the time, the car was going to turn onto our street into the projects, and it changed his mind. It took off the other way. I don't blame him. So, all right, so we're going to jump into today's show. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation after the video is done, give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. So here we go. Going to cue this up, and then let's hear about July the 13th, 1977. Here we go, and what we can learn from it now.
The lights went off. Everybody realized something had happened. All I remember was people with stuff. Buildings were burning, cars in the street were burning, garbage in lots were burning.
Anger, neglect, need. A lot of frustration had been released.
Blackout. One American experience. Exclusive corporate funding for American Experience is provided by Liberty Mutual Insurance. American Experience is also made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you. Imagine yourself on top of One World Trade Center on the 107th floor. Windows on the World Restaurant was one of the most magical places on Earth, not just in New York City. On a clear day, you could see 90 miles, planes flying below you. At 9:30, anybody in the restaurant business will tell you, is crunch time. I was walking the floor, and all of a sudden, I look to my right, and Brooklyn is not there anymore. Okay, it's just, where did Brooklyn go? And then I quickly glance over, Queens is gone. It's blackout. There's no lights whatsoever. And as soon as I get into the window, we're overlooking Manhattan, downtown Manhattan, lights go out for us.
New York City is a vertical city. There are people in apartment houses that are 10 stories high. They don't have any water. They have no lights. And there is a sense of urgency.
I stopped the car, and there was about 400 or 500 people in that park. And I told my partners, we're not going down there. Let's get out of here.
It wasn't just nighttime. It was total darkness. Everybody was kind of moving in groups. I'm sure they were scared, too. You know, because you don't know who's coming at you.
It was like, I think I reached this boiling point. Once the lights went out, no hell broke loose.
Like an orgy of violence
arson and insanity. How do you explain that social phenomenon?
Hazy, hot, and humid. High in the daytime, up near 100 overnight. Lows down to around 80.
A lot of fingers crossed with a continued heat wave.
July 13, 1977. I was working my last 4 to 12 in a set of 5. It was a beastly hot day. I distinctly remember it was horribly hot.
The city's in the midst of a heat wave. Temperatures were routinely hitting 100, above 100.
Around 6 o'clock, I headed home. I got home early enough that I got in the pool with the kids. Somewhere around 8 o'clock, it was clear that thunderstorms were going to move in. It's really got out.
Weather advisory, severe thunderstorm warning in effect for all of Westchester County to New York. Now, these storms can produce wind gusts 50 miles an hour and more. Lightning, so be advised, whatever precautions seem advisable.
My daughter was brushing her teeth and looked out the bathroom window and said, "What's wrong with the sky, Dad? It looks strange." Yeah, because the lightning, so much of it just stays lit.
That evening, there was a lightning strike on a power line in Westchester County. The line went out, and the demand starts to increase on some of the surrounding lines. This sort of essentially sets off a kind of chain reaction, a sort of a domino effect, where another line suddenly has too much power, and it has to be shut down. And then another line is overextended, and it has to be shut down. Everyone's using a lot of power because they're all running air conditioners. And before you know it, the city is struggling to get enough power into the 5 boroughs.
I got a call.
All right, I wanted to stop it there really quickly because the grid is very much a direct representation of our financial system. Everything is interconnected. And once something goes down one place, it will cross-pollinate and will cause for the shutdown, or will cause a strain on other parts of the economic system for it to start to, and if it's already taxed at its max, there it goes. And this is all by design. Completely by design. And so that's one of the things that I wanted you to really hear. I'm going to continue to listen to this, but when you hear about how the grid, it's also the financial system that's. And so now I want you to think about this being a financial event, because I think this is what we're going to be dealing with in the near future. Here we go. It's closer to it today than it was yesterday. Here we go. One second.
Well, maybe a bit after 9, asking me to call the system operator. I called in and finally said, there's no other choice. The only alternative was to disconnect customers.
You know, you're going to lose the whole thing. Yeah, tell him it's a dire emergency. If he can give us any more to give it tonight.
It is one man who is in charge of bringing all of this power in. You have people telling him, yelling at him, you have to shut down some of these lines. You have to do it or the city's going to lose power.
Bill, I hate to bother you, but you better shed about 400 megawatts of load or you're going to lose everything down there.
Yeah. I'm trying to.
Anyone who's ever flown into New York City at night, who's ever been in New York City at night, there are lights everywhere. It's a beautiful image, really, in a way. A city that never sleeps, a city where the lights are always on.
I was playing handball with my friends. And you could still play at night because there was a lot of lampposts around Jefferson Park. But then all of a sudden, they started going out one by one. And we're like, wow, what's happening?
That night on the third floor, windows open. It was very hot, so people were outside. And suddenly, the TV went off. The light went off. All of a sudden, the noise outside in the street quickly stopped for a second, and suddenly you heard a because everybody at the same time realized something had happened.
I was up in the office. I was catching up on some paperwork. And had a cup of coffee, and the lights dimmed. The emergency generator roared on, and somebody shouted blackout. You know?
One of the things about windows on the world, right from the very beginning, was its dress code. You had to have a jacket and tie. The general manager said to me, "You can tell people they can take their jackets off. Take their jackets off, you know. Okay, you can take your jackets off. Next thing, the ties are coming off. Next thing, you know, people loosening their shirts." The general manager got up and immediately spoke. "Ladies and gentlemen, everybody's getting champagne."
Now, direct from CBS News, this special Radio Net Alert news report. A major power blackout has hit New York City and surrounding communities.
Chuck, if you could, what can you tell us about the feel for Midtown Manhattan?
Well, George, there are people directing traffic at the intersections. I assume many of them are policemen. Some of them, obviously, are just volunteers, people who wanted to pitch in. But in general, people are taking it in good spirit and almost a little conviviality going on.
Where were you when the
light went out? City Music Hall.
What happened to the music hall?
All of a sudden, lights went out. And, no picture, no sound, nothing, and made an announcement about the power was off in the whole city.
And you're waiting for the subway now?
No, there's no subway running.
So what are you doing here?
I'm on TV.
You're awesome.
All I can tell you is there was a severe electrical storm to the north. Lights totally went out about 15 minutes ago.
All five roads are affected, so that's the word. 7 million people are now without power.
My beat at the Post was covering politics. I went running over to City Hall, and I spent the night in the command center where we got regular briefings on what they said was going on in the city. The blackout was not the city's fault, but it was an opportunity for the mayor, A. Bean, to show the people of New York that he was in control.
What are you doing out of this? We're trying to keep on top to every agency of the city, to do everything possible to keep things moving and keep people alerted and have people who are the city agencies at their stations and visit their needs.
I'm not sure to this day if he or even the police commissioner actually knew what was going on, because if they did, they didn't tell us.
I'm trying to scramble, you know, to find out what the big issues are. I call up the five battalions, seeing how things are in their district of Farnsworth, were evidently working. And I told them, hey, we got to go down to those subways, make sure those people stuck in those hot trains don't bail out on those third rail tracks. And then we have these portable generators that are useful. You know, hospitals, that's our first priority.
At Bellevue, the city's largest hospital, emergency generator service has been halted by an electrical fire. Steps are being taken to protect the lives of patients, respirators, and other necessary electrical equipment. Dr. Stephen Schwartz at New York's Lenox Hospital says emergency equipment is working there, but they're bracing for a possible flood of patients.
Then, you know, I got called to go respond to a fire. And and I never returned to the fires.
I knew this was going to be a very difficult and challenging task to put the power system back together. It's really not made to shut down and restart. It's made to stay in service.
We knew this was going to be a long, drawn-out affair. The restoration plan was out of date because it hadn't been updated since 1965. So between Charlie and I, we made up the plan.
Well, there's only two ways to restore the power. One is to bootstrap the system up on its own, or to bring power in from the outside. We both knew that the quickest, fastest way was to get power in from the outside. I said, I'll take the part from the north. Jack, you take the part from the Long Island Lighting. And at some point, we're going to meet in the middle.
Insofar as police are concerned, all off-duty police officers are being ordered to their nearest precinct, not the precinct where they work, but the precinct of residence.
We didn't know it was a big blackout. The lights went out, but who knew if the lights were going to stay out? There was no AM/FM radios in the patrol cars at the time, so you had no radio communication with the outside. Our portable radio had died because the repeater's being out. But we go back into the station house. And when we went into the station house, that's when we really knew that the pot was cooking. Station house was in darkness, complete and utter darkness. Everybody's walking around with flashlights, some candles, and it looked like a cross between a Boris Karloff movie and Car 54. The sergeant said, go out, do the best you can. Come back in a little while, we're going to have a better plan in place. But go out and do what you can do.
Years earlier, November 1965, New York City lost its power, and it was a very startling event. But all in all, the city handled it remarkably well. You know, the urban legend was that 9 months later, you know, births spiked in the city. I don't know if that's actually true, but I think that captivated the sense that most people had of almost a kind of moment out of the ordinary, but not a scary or threatening experience.
I remember the blackout of 65 as almost being fun. There was a certain festive atmosphere. People pulled together. There were little get-togethers on the streets.
Had a bright moon. Everything was peaceful. We were directing traffic, and then we had everybody else to start directing traffic with us. People became helpful to each other. And it went very, very smoothly.
The blackout in 1965 happened at 5:30. So the store owners were still in their stores locking up. The temperature was between 43 and 48 degrees, right? So people were not out on the street.
A lot of people simply stay in their houses. There was no real sense of panic. There was no increase in crime. And really no big deal.
New York had been this great kind of working class city. You could come to New York, immigrants obviously from around the world, you could find a job, you could make a better life.
Through the mid-1960s, New York was doing pretty well economically. It was both a financial center, it was a huge manufacturing center. You see blue-collar workers all over the place. You would see factories making garments, making electronic goods. You see people working, unloading ships on the docks.
New York was historically a city that did take care of people, where the subways were heavily subsidized, where you had great public schools, where you had this fantastic network of universities that were free. And by 1977, I mean, all of this was just such a distant memory. The ambitions of the city had diminished so greatly, and this notion that the city could take care of the people who lived in it was gone.
Treasury Secretary Simon said today that the country is in a recession.
For the first time since 1941, the nation's unemployment rate has gone above 9%.
In New York City, the rate of unemployment is much higher than it is nationally, higher than at any time since the Great Depression.
The 1970s was an economically troubled period for the whole United States, and New York was particularly hard hit by this general turn downward. New York hits a 12% unemployment rate in 1975. That's just a huge unemployment rate, and you can feel it all over, every place. It's visceral. People hang out on the streets, increase in petty crime, a sense of despair in a lot of areas, you know, of giving up.
There was this sense that there were no jobs in New York. People were fleeing the city, moving to the suburbs if they could. Some of the middle-class white families moved out, what became known as white flight. There was just sort of a sense of desperation about New York at the time.
The city will need more than God's help to get out of this mess. New York needs $500 million a month to keep its head above water.
In 1975, New York City was on the brink of bankruptcy, and it needed a loan from Washington. And President Ford gave it some thought and came back to New York and said, you're not going to get a loan.
After very dramatically turning down a city request, there was a retreat in Washington from that hard line. But they would only give New York City the money it needed to avoid bankruptcy if New York City adopted austerity measures. That meant cutting public services, laying off tens of thousands of workers, and other kinds of measures that assured them that they would get that money back.
When those layoffs of police and firefighters came, you know, we were shocked. And that was sort of like a little unwritten social contract that was broken by the city. The police went on strike, the fire went on strike, sanitation went on strike.
This big cut in public services at a time when the private economy is in very bad shape means hardship. They had immediate impact on New Yorkers, and particularly on poor New Yorkers. People can't send the kids off the streets into the library. It's not there anymore. They can't send them to the after-school athletic program to keep them safe. It's not there anymore. So there's a lot of anger and also, I think, a sense of abandonment.
Graffiti, crime, drugs, homeless people, squeegee people. People would put in their car windows. No radio, so people wouldn't break their windows. So it was, the city was going down.
When a population is neglected for so long, and then they keep cutting your social services, your education, your hospitals, your fire departments, it's going to boil. And sooner or later, something's going to come out of that. And it wasn't going to be pretty.
This is the Bronx in New York. 1.5 million people live in this borough. It's the home of the New York Yankees. It has also become the arson capital of the world. Once that smoke on the horizon signified industry, progress, jobs. Now it means someone is burning down a building.
We call those years the fire years when the city was burning down. When I come in the fire service, a busy fire company, did 1,700 to 2,000 runs a year. In the 1970s, we were all doing 5,000 alarms a year, smoking, carelessness, falling asleep with a cigarette, cooking fires, and electrical fires. They were the three top causes.
We have fire on the fifth floor, causing flyby.
But then there was arson. Arson for profit, arson for revenge. You wanted to get even to a neighbor. You had arson for fun. A couple of kids with a can of gasoline could light a vacant building and have a pool watching firefighters come with big area ladders and a night, hot night, and we might just throw water into this building. You had fires for boredom.
The block below me, of the 60 houses, maybe only five of them hadn't had a fire. You knew that there's a chance that your house could catch on fire. So it caused that next person next door to move. Now that landlord didn't get his rent. This led to the temptation for some people to consider burning the building and collecting the insurance. It became a domino effect.
On top of all that, there was a serial killer on the loose in New York.
In New York, the search continues for the Son of Sam, the object of one of the biggest manhunts in this city's history.
The killer has taunted authorities by writing two letters signed Son of Sam.
The NYPD was then and still is the preeminent police department in the country, and he was eluding the NYPD. Everybody was very tense, and it contributed to the sense of nobody was in control. It was becoming embarrassing to say you were a New Yorker after having been so many years when you were proud to be a New Yorker. The city was falling apart.
By 10 o'clock, that's when I started to hear the noises. And first one mother goes, what is that? You heard these bumping noises. Just boom, 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 outside. And so my mother opens the door and she looks and I stick my head out. And the staircase door was open a little bit. And you see a washing machine going up the stairs. Then after that, a refrigerator comes upstairs. Then those giant furniture TVs, you know, the old Zeniths with the sound system in the record player, those started going up. And it was just box after box after box after box. It just happened, like a tinderbox. It went from being lights to being looting. All I remember was people with stuff, coats, clothes, like people just have their stuff draped over their arms, like, you want to buy this, you want to buy that. They stole clothes, electronics, just everything you could think of.
It happened within minutes in all these neighborhoods. Every single borough in New York was affected by the looting. And it happens, I mean, just instantaneously.
Ace Pontiac stored 50 brand new Pontiacs in its garage, and the fire department had a rule that if you stored cars inside a building, you had to leave the key in the ignition, and you had to put $2 worth of gas in the tank. All of these cars vanished in the first hour and a half.
There was people everywhere. Hundreds. Hundreds of a block. We responded to a call for assistance from Wyckoff Heights Hospital.
and the staff in the emergency room was being hard-pressed to keep up with the injuries because the looters were suffering such vicious cuts from the glass. There was blood everywhere. There was people with some hellacious injuries, and it really was starting to slide.
I was in medical school, so, you know, I figured I might as well just go and work at the hospital. It was packed, full-blown, people outside in the street waiting to get in. I went in, and there were some doctors there, and I explained that I was a medical student, and he asked me, had I sutured before? And I said, well, I'd done a little bit, but not really. He said, okay, come, I'll show you. We need your help. All night long, I was in a corner just closing up wounds.
We had our store, which was entitled Trophies by Sill. It was a sporting goods and trophy shop. We thought of it as more than a store. We taught the young people how to open a bank account, how to fill out the forms. My husband would go with them, show them how to do that. That evening, the lights went out as we were eating. And my husband said, oh, maybe we better get back over there. And I said to him, well, let me do the dishes first. I probably lost about an hour. When we got to maybe 5-6 blocks away from our store.
Okay, everyone, getting ready to go to our first commercial break. When we come back, we're going to jump back into this. I hope you're picking up some very, very important things and clues as to the anatomy of chaos. And that's very, very important. So we're getting ready to go to a commercial break. You're listening to Tando Radio Show. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We are taking a look at what happened in the Lights Out Blackout in New York City on July the 13th, 1977, and how that can help us in looking at and how, what we can learn from when the fiscal lights go out here in the whole United States. Very, very important. So we're going to jump back to this, and then we will get to your calls once when we have like 20 minutes left in the show. So let's get back to it. Here we go.
We started seeing our merchandise in the street. I just drove up on the sidewalk and I parked the car directly where the doorway was. The people who were inside, when they saw my husband, they said, "Hey, Mr. Silverman still is here," and they started running. It was sad in some ways, because some people that you saw would be people you would not have expected to see in that capacity, and yet they were there.
I said, "Okay," I walk over to the store, and I saw a crowd on the side of the store. They were pushing and shoving to get into the store, and people were coming out carrying things. They got out hi-fi, they got out TVs. The store next to me, the owner came over to me, and he said, "I'm shooting in the air to scare them away." He said, "You need a gun." I said, "No way." I said, "I'll get hurt if I have a gun." I couldn't do anything about it, so I just was watching. And then my knees started to shake.
We had to stay there all night, because if we left, they were going to come in and take the rest. There was no police to stop them. Who would stop them from taking whatever else was there?
One problem with the police is they were told to report to the nearest precinct of them. Almost none of them live in the affected precincts, in the poor neighborhoods. A major looting occurred when there were almost no policemen on the street.
It took hours to get cops to the neighborhoods that needed them most. By the time they get there, this thing is on.
There were a lot of merchants and people who wanted police to come to their stores, stand there with their rifles in their hands and keep the people out. Well, the police didn't have anywhere near the manpower or police power to do that.
Oh, God, we're going. Oh, God, we're going. We'd like to sit here and watch.
No, it's all right.
Our instructions were do the best you can. And we did the best we could. We had sticks. We had our hands. We'd grab people and just toss them out. We were so outnumbered, we'd push them back as far as we could. The people would only respond so far. And then they would start hurling rocks and bottles at us. And then there was a pitch battle in the street. After a while, it was, what can you do? It was insanity.
On WABC in New York, we switched out to Steve O'Brien.
Thank you, George. Walking into one of the neighborhood establishments, we found that still an atmosphere of extreme levity, considering the situation. Anyway, people are feeling no pain in most of the establishments around the area.
The lights went out, and the beer came out, and the candle. We had a block party. I didn't find out until the next day that there was any looting, right? I mean, if you didn't live on a commercial street, you didn't know the looting had happened.
We were on an island in the sky, isolated from whatever else was happening in all of New York City. We had these emergency lights, but it wasn't enough. I mean, so we started bringing candles in. In hindsight, I don't think that was a good idea, because the candles also gave off heat. Air conditioning now has been out for since 9:30, but still, some people we had to ask to leave. It was that kind of thing, you know. They liked the champagne part. Sort of sounds like the Titanic when we talk about the band play on, you know. We had a three-piece combo of piano, bass, and guitar. The piano continued on. you weren't in one of those neighborhoods, you know, if you were on the Upper East Side, enjoying a candlelit dinner on your roof, you had no idea what was going on all around you.
George, I just had a Con Ed spokesman on the phone to see if we can get a better idea of when Con Ed will be restoring that power. Here's Ed Livingston right now.
We really can't estimate that. We're working as hard as we can and as fast as we can. But I don't want to build up any hopes and pick a number of hours because we just can't be sure right now.
We were moving step by step, very methodic, logical way of picking up the load. The generation was coming on slowly. I'm busy concentrating, and I turn around, and there's the chairman of the board and the president of the company.
They just wanted me to proceed with a sense of urgency, which we were. Each time we came to a point where we could pick up another network, about 15 minutes, that doesn't seem like a lot of time when you're talking one network, but when you have 15 networks, it's a lot of time. Electricity is a kind of a keystone for stability. And if we can get the street lights back on, the traffic lights working and all that kind of thing, there's a much better likelihood that the police and so forth can maintain control. First group went into the stores 10 minutes after the blackout occurred. These were a criminal element. Then the stores were open. And then another class of looters came in, people who did not have a criminal background, whom it would not occur to go and smash the window of a store and go and grab something. But they sat in their hot apartments, seeing people run in and grab stuff, and they said, you know, I could really use some Pampers.
I remember the rattling. It's a very distinct rattling. A whole bunch of housewives had looted the supermarket at the corner where I used to live. And what they had done is they had taken pantyhose and they had tied shopping carts together so they could make a shopping cart train. And then they had loaded all the stuff, all this merchandise, Pampers, toilet paper, food, on these carts and were pushing them home.
These were the people who tended to get arrested. They had never been arrested before. And here they were arrested and charged with stealing a couch or some clothes. There were not a package of Pampers survived the looting.
Anybody and everybody, children, women, men, people with jobs, people without jobs, they all got caught up in the moment. They didn't feel like they were committing a crime. Because the whole general atmosphere, the whole feeling of it was, everybody's doing it, why not?
Looting is a complicated thing. People do it because they're greedy, because they need stuff. It's also sometimes fun. It's the people on the bottom being on the top for a moment. And they know it's only for a moment, but who's going to stop? Who's going to stop? No one can stop. That can be a thrill.
It was the neighborhood that had been neglected that rioted. And it was basically people who were poor and hungry. The media paints it as, look at these criminals. It's race, but it's not so much race as it is class. Black people didn't go after white people. Latinos did not go after the Italians. It was more about class. We didn't have, so we went, not even after those who had, we went after their stuff. It's an expression of anger, it's an expression of neglect, and it's an expression of need.
If you don't control the crime problem and the people causing the disorder, it becomes a fire problem. The dispatcher ordered us to go from fire to fire. You were driving in the street. People were waving to you for help. You couldn't stop. Buildings were burning. Cars in the street were burning. Garbage in lots were burning. You know, you'd hear the dispatcher, no companies available, no companies available. They would only send us to big store fires. You know, we would go to these big supermarket fires, appliance store fires, which would be broken into, looted, and burned.
Not only did they loot the stores, they burned them. And to me, that was the ultimate violation. You took everything. Now, why are you going to burn the store down as well?
Fire is a special effect. You light a car, you've got a spectacular event. Fire, you know, it's got noise, it's got smoke, it's got flame, it's got sound. It was a crazy scene, you know, it was just something out of like a world war.
New York City in the early morning, after a night of no electric power, and so no lights, elevators, subway trains, or any trains, airports, air conditioning, traffic signals, television. What it did have in the dark streets was a wild outburst of crime, arson, looting, mugging, and a thousand false fire alarms.
After the blackout, everyone is trying to make sense of what has happened to New York. There was this sense that New York is not just in financial trouble, not just struggling, but there's something really existentially, foundationally wrong with New York. And New York is in real, real trouble.
We got up that next day. I got on my bike and rode around the neighborhood. And you just saw everything was gone. And that's when it kind of sunk in that nothing's going to be the same. You know, nothing's ever going to be the same. And you just go, so what are people supposed to do now? You know?
It sort of felt like some bomb had gone off, but instead of destroying the buildings, all you had was a whole bunch of confetti and paper. And it was a very quiet city. I think that one of the reasons for this quietness was because a lot of frustration had been released. And even if you yourself had not gone out there to loot, others had. And somehow, I think that brings you some sort of catharsis.
Once the sun was up, the stolers were now there. Many of them have roots in the neighborhood and were actually connected to the neighborhood. So they were hurt and we were hurt.
They got everything I lost for my money. I worked about 10 years for this. I lost everything. It's like, I don't have no issue, nothing. I have three kids, a wife, I lost everything. You got these people now, they're worried about their business as to whether they can start again in a community like this. As to whether they're going to trust these people around here, I doubt it. The merchants, they're not going to trust these people after this. I wouldn't trust them.
So, yourself, what are you going to do now?
Well, I tell you, I'm going to leave this great big apple to those that want to stay here. I can't fight this anymore.
Early the next morning, and I walk into the store, and the lights were still out, but there's enough light for me to see where I'm going. It was horrendous. It was a lot of work. there was going to be no guarantee that we could make it, more to cut out all the questions, not any major statement. I just put a sign on the window that said, we're staying.
They had taken so much. We lost, I think it was something like $350,000 worth of merchandise. My whole thought was, how am I going to stay in business? My husband, he just sat down with people who looted the store, talked to them, told them he was disappointed. But he never reacted in such a way that would have been a negative on his part. You know, now that was something I could not do. I could not sit down and look a person in the eye and say, it's okay. It was not okay. No matter how long we stayed, the store never really was what it had been all those years ago.
My neighborhood stayed that way for probably 15 years. That whole strip never opened back up. Ever again. Everybody that lived there, those mom and pop stores, they just shut down and they left.
We got finished at about 8 in the morning. I sat on the hood of the car and looked down Broadway. I said, I think the neighborhood's done. I think the back has finally been broken. And it was. I truly believe that that night took the carpet out from under the people.
What triggered the blackout? A federal report places the primary blame on Consolidated Edison, saying it was unprepared to deal with the crisis touched off by a severe thunderstorm.
A blackout is almost similar to an airplane crash. It's never just one item. From the first lightning strike to the complete system shutdown, it's a series of events that if any one of them didn't occur or was responded to differently, would have prevented the blackout.
It was a night of terror that lasted for 25 hours. What happened to this blinded city? 3,176 people arrested, 132 policemen injured, 1,576 businesses looted or set on fire.
The blackout produced the largest mass arrest in the city's history. We're talking about thousands of people. And we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of damage and stolen property.
There were 1,000 major fires that night. 1,000 major fires. I mean, that's mind-boggling. There's a social order that's necessary to live in these dense urban areas, and that broke down that night.
From the worst slums of the city, the light of mindless violence lit up the sky. As the blackout divided the town into two societies, separate and unequal.
The blackout gave you appreciation of the fragility of urban life. You flip the switch and darkness turns to light, you know, and you just totally take all this stuff for granted. And an event like that makes you realize how contingent, you know, how fragile all that is.
You can't hit your mom because she's your mom, so you hit your little brother. Something like that is what was happening. You couldn't go after these politicians that were killing your neighborhood. So you went after your little brother. You went after each other.
If you wanted to say, when was the bottom of the decaying, declining New York City, you would have to say 1977, the blackout. We've had some very good, prosperous times in New York City since then. But this is always there as an example of what could happen.
Exclusive corporate funding for American Experience is provided by Liberty Mutual Insurance. American Experience is also made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
All right, so getting ready to go to, we got 6 minutes before we go to a commercial break. So it was so much that was there. There's another part of it all that we're going to play, but I wanted to hold it up there real quickly, only because just wanted to chime in with you all. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. It was so much that was there. Give us a call, 866-510-9025, and then hit star. We'll see you in queue. We're going to continue with this because it's a little more, but I just wanted to lay out some things before we go to the next commercial break. I would say, because I was there, and one of the most powerful things about what I loved about this documentary was that when the gentleman from New York said that you can't hit your mom, so you hit your brother. And I thought that was so significant because of this. The system knows that. That blackout, as I look back on it from my life experience, I realized that was a coordinated event to bring about exactly what came after. It was the way in which the system was purging the mom and pop stores so that corporatism could start to rise in a different way. And all that goes along with corporatism. Yes, they had the perfect plausible deniability situation in the storm. But the storm was not what caused the blackout. What actually caused that blackout was the opportunity to use the storm as the victim, just as they've been doing with so many other forming different boogeymen and different outlooks for you to look at by way of all forms of terrorism, all forms of this and that, hacking, this and that. But that is the system positioning itself to harness more energy from the general population. Hey, and David, it works.
David.
Yeah. Go ahead, Scotty.
One thing I picked up from watching another film, the film was actually about the birth of hip-hop. It was on Netflix. It was called The Get Down. And it uses this time period in New York as the backdrop. And, you know, even in fictional films, you will get a little bit of truth. Or you will find some nuggets of truth in there. And one of the things I picked up...
Right. You sure will, Scotty.
Yeah, one of the things I picked up was that from that, watching that TV series and then listening to what you just played, it wasn't really the people that was behind all of the arson, setting these buildings mm-hmm. and stuff mm-hmm. on fire. Those were the landlords, the building owners, the business owners doing hiring people to set them on fire so they could get the insurance money. So, but I'm listening to these people, you know, that one lady going to say, okay, you stole all the stuff. Why you want to burn the building down? Well, how she know they burnt it down? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It don't make, why would they burn it down? It don't make sense for them to burn it down after they get the Pampers for their babies.
No.
What have you.
No. And Scotty, you're absolutely right. And I'm going to tell you why. Because in that overall frenzy of things, they're moving on to the next. First, they got to get rid of, because now one of the things about looting is this. You can only carry as much as you physically can by different means. That's why they had the shopping carts and all that other things. Now, in order for you to get what you've looted home, you got to walk home now. You're not worried about setting anything on fire. That's not your intention.
Right.
You're worried about the darkness and who is going to take from you what you just took from the store.
Now, another thing
we've been there.
Another thing I picked up from watching that Netflix film, The Get Down. Again, this was about the birth of hip-hop, but I was picking up other stuff from it. But this is the time period of Donald Trump rise in,
yep.
As a real estate mogul. So as these buildings are being burnt down, okay, if you got a burnout concrete building, then guess what? That I can buy that property a whole lot cheaper than I could when it was intact before it was set on fire. And Donald Trump went around buying up a bunch of cheap property like that. And I wouldn't put it past him to be part of the conspiracy to set them on fire for insurance money to begin with. But that's all I wanted to add.
That's exactly right. And some of the things that were significant in this whole thing was that the storm was the perfect storm. The lightning was the, and then Con Ed had said, yeah, we goofed because Con Ed had been bribed. Let me tell you what's going to happen, in my opinion, ladies and gentlemen. We got a caller that's in queue. And get ready to go to this caller. Well, I'm a hold on because I don't like to keep our callers waiting. We got a caller out of Michigan. Welcome, caller, to Tando Radio Show. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what is your question or comment?
This is Brother Arkeith from Detroit. How you doing today, Tando?
Brother Arkeith, what's going on, brother? Good.
Man, I can't. It was a particular part where I think it was one of the one when he talked about the landlord who mentioned that some of the rent wasn't paid, so he burned the building down. Being from Detroit, and a lot of people are not aware of this, they probably are now, but I know the day before Halloween, they call it Devil's Night.
Mm-hmm.
And on Devil's Night, they burn down a lot of things. And from my understanding, being from that area, there's a lot of slumlords who
yeah.
had some problems with their property, had some problems with people, you know, the property just wasn't any good anymore. And they burned it down and got the insurance money, and they would use Devil's Night as an excuse to cover
yeah.
up. So I can understand, I'm well aware on that particular part when the gentleman was talking about burning down his property. And, you know, in Detroit, they used that night. They used that night as justifying that, hey, somebody burned it up.
So true. And man, brother, that is, and this is what's been done throughout history. And we, you know, it's, and then what do? They, once again, they blame it on the situation that they created, on those that they adversely affected from their response to it all. It's the perfect ploy. It's the perfect ploy. Now, why is this so significant? See, what happened was that New York at that time, because of the economic situation, because of the social situation, it was building up to for it, this event to happen, just like the Watts riot in the 60s and just like the LA riots in 92. It was all fermented, and they saw an opportunity, and once that opportunity arrived, they used it. The system used it to gain more control. They are definitely brewing that fire now. And if you really look at it, the plan is for a blackout because it's so efficient in a blackout because no one can see because of their eyes, because of the darkness, and because of the frenzy that's going on by everyone else. No one will really see what the true criminal act is. And that's what's going to happen economically here, but it's not just going to happen in one major city or two major cities. It's going to be nationally, and it's going to be nationally by different degrees based on the overall potential for control. There's a reason why they're moving everyone by Agenda 21 into cities. There's a reason why everything is being coordinated the way it's being coordinated now, the just-in-time delivery system, because that is going to give those that pull the switch, when they pull it, like they pulled Building 7, when they pull the switch, like they pulled the switch in New York City in July, when they pull it, it will be a most effective pull. And all of the people will say that, oh, the lights went out because of the storm. And this is what they're going to say. The lights went out because of a hacker. The lights went out because, I mean, the financial crisis happened because of this and because of that. Not really realizing that that was the intention of the system, to reset itself as a wealth transfer, that it happens almost like clockwork on schedule. These are the things that we really start to contend with. Hey, listen, guys, get ready to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we'll get back to this. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from L.A. And if you'd like to get on today's show, and the topic is what we can learn from 1977, lights blackout, that can help us to plan for the upcoming financial blackout that will happen. Give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. So all this a coordinated effort. Now, one of the things that I also want to bring to your attention, but if you have something that you want to add to it, don't hesitate, come on in. Now, when the event happened in New York, and at the time I was a young man living in New Jersey, when the lights first went out, that's when it was extremely quiet because everyone was in shock and in awe. Then after that, things were kind of, you know, adjusting to it. You know, it's like the old saying, if you go from where you have lights to where there's no longer lights, your body has to, it's a process that your body goes through to adjust to it. For, you know, for you to start to be able to have, you know, some form of night vision and everything else, your eyes have to adjust and everything else. Well, in that adjustment period in New York and in New Jersey, you could feel it. And I lived very, very close to New York City, and I could start to smell the burning in New York and everything else. And everybody already knew what was happening. But here was what was important and what I want to convey to you all. Once a major event such as that one, and the one we're going to see, or the one you may happen to be in that may not be the climax of the historical changing, the history changing event that's going to change the United States, the so-called, the corporation of the United States to be dissolved, may not be that event, but you may have an event, something similar to you where you are. And one of the anatomies of these things is this. There's a golden opportunity for you to respond immediately, but you have to already have a plan before that happens. Because when the lights went out in New Jersey, parents had no clue, because it was a really, really hot night. Everybody was out. Everybody was traveling. They were doing their own thing. They were in different places. And they were... people were everywhere. Parents were away from their children. Children were away from their parents, and so forth and so on. You have to always have a plan with your family on how to respond to certain things before it happened. Because once it happens, you will not be able to coordinate a response when you're not together. Very, very important. When the lights first went out in New York, that was the golden opportunity for people to get where they didn't want to be to where they wanted to be as quickly as possible under the conditions and the circumstances. Now, one of the good things about the lights being out is that it does offer you some measure, if you're prepared, to be able to travel without being seen. But the dangers that go along with that are even greater because you can't see. So
hello,
I just
Dave.
Wanted to really, really... Yeah, yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
Dave,
hold
this
on.
Is Gary.
Hold on a sec. One sec, Gary. Let me pull this up. Go ahead, Gary.
Hey, how you doing, Dave? Scotty, everybody.
What's up, brother? How you feeling?
Man, I just caught the tail end of this show, man, and I caught the broadcast from the blackout. 77, I was on 42nd Street watching Star Wars when the lights went out.
Oh, wow.
And we were in the
that's
theater.
Right, because Star Wars came out. That's right. That's when the first Star Wars came out. Actually,
oh,
that summer.
Man.
But go ahead, Gary.
What an experience that was, Dave. I had to try to make my way back to Brooklyn from Times Square that night. In the midst of all of this looting, in the midst of everybody.
Wait, hold on, Gary. We got to, because there's some people that may not, you know, some people may have gone to New York City, you know, now Times Square, but let's lay the picture out. What was the environment and what was it like in Times Square back in 1977? It's much different than what it is right now.
Oh, no, it's not Disneyland. It's not Disneyland like now, that's for sure. I mean, it was a completely different time, space, and everything. I mean, it was really, really a different time. And we were in that movie theater, and the credits had just finished rolling. You know how they do in the beginning, where the credits are rolling up, and they're telling you the story?
Yeah.
Yeah, and just after that, and the movie just started, man, and all of a sudden, everything just went black. And the lights never came back on. And the lights
wow.
never came back on. And when they found out that the lights were out everywhere in the city, it was nothing but chaos. It was
right.
bananas. I never seen anything like that in my life. And I hope, you know, I hope I don't ever again, but, you know, it seems like that's the plan, like you said, you know, an exchange of wealth, man, because Scotty was right. Those people whose stores were on fire, those people were the store owners that were burning the rest of their store up so they can make sure that they can get their insurance money. That's
right.
what that was. Yes, there were opportunists. Yes, there was looting. There was people who were taking stuff like that. But nobody had any real... What was the purpose? I mean, I saw a guy get his arm cut off to reaching into a window that had just been broken, and a glass came down and cut his arm off right there.
Right.
You know, it was an incredible night, man. I never seen anything like it, man. When I finally made my way walking back to Brooklyn, to my house, from 42nd Street, and people were sitting around, you know, still in amazement that the lights were still out, you know, and all of the, you know, all the chaos was going on all around you, you know. But man, I'm so thankful, man, to my ancestors for protecting me that night, man. It was an unbelievable experience, man. And I'm glad that I was able to get this in to share this with you, brother. Because I mean that,
but, man,
everything. There's no way to describe the chaos. I mean,
no.
Other than a world war, you know, some kind of major war just taking place, you know, an attack.
Right, right, and it was so bad. There was no relief from it, and it was continuous. And so, if you heard Gary say the lights wouldn't come back on, and that was a shock to many people, and it was a very difficult thing to deal with.
Hey, Dave, you know what happened?
Yeah.
You know how they have it now, where they have the emergency lights that are supposed to come on in the theater when there's a blackout
yeah.
or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess back in those times, they were not as efficient as they were today. But when those lights went out in that movie theater, they never came back on. No emergency lights came on, no nothing. You know,
yeah.
It was complete darkness on 42nd Street.
And that was the last place in the world you wanted to be, because 42nd Street had all forms of the It was the worst of the worst on 42nd Street. It was every person for themselves. And the only thing was really beneficial for Gary was that the lights had just went out, and so everyone was still in shock. You didn't want to be on 42nd Street 1 hour, 2 hours later, because that environment totally changed. The people were getting mugged,
no trains were running. I mean, cars were going by picking up people, and of course, you know, they were they're gouging people for fares. Get me home, take me to this place, take me to that place. But then the street lights were out, so it was traffic jams everywhere. Trying to get over the bridge was chaos. I mean, literally, the good thing was once you made it to the Brooklyn Bridge, you can cross there, you know. But people were walking across the bridges between cars, you know, trying to get across the bridges and stuff to get home. It was quite a scene that night, man. I'm surprised they didn't make a movie about it.
Yeah, you know, I am too, Gary, but I was surprised about that too. And you know, one of the things that was very important about that was that that's when a car became, in some instances, a hindrance. Because you were really, really stuck. Now, and I think in the future, when things go awry, depending on how big they are, if it's a major, major event, and I'm going to tell you, many people are preparing for stuff to happen. So when a major event happens, the violence of the opportunists that you're going to see is going to be quick and swift because they know that the lights won't be coming back on. And
Dave,
that is going to catch
many big trucks. In my life, I've never seen so many 4x4s, big wheel trucks. Everybody's got the big light bars on the top, like they do in The Walking Dead and all that other stuff. People are really preparing for this thing. It's bananas out there.
Yeah, it really is. And we got to, man, Gary. Hold on, Gary, because we got a couple of other callers. But hold on, bro, because just want to share some other thoughts with you.
Well said. Thank you in the room, man. But thank you for letting me express.
Man, definitely. Much love, much respect, my brother Gary. Gary, make sure you're for after Tando tonight. We're going to have the call. Make sure you're there.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll call you.
All right.
So
we got another. Okay, cool. We got another caller in queue. My man Roz, go ahead, sound off, brother. We got like 5 minutes left in the show. Seven, 8 minutes left in the show. We'll give you whatever time you need, brother. Go ahead.
Peace. I just wanted to check in. I thought that the documentary was great. It actually happened a few days after my birthday. I was born on July 7, 73, so I was actually 4 years old. And the only thing I remember is that it was pitch black out the window and people on the street with flashlights on my block. And I was just like wondering what the heck was going on. I was too young to make any sense of it. But the crazy part is when you were bringing up what Times Square was like, I could tell you because I knew about it from the late 70s all the way through the 90s when I was making music, because we used to make music upstairs from D&D Studio, which was on, I believe it was 46 and 8th Avenue. So there was nothing but peep shows, prostitutes, open air drug markets, robbers, killers. The stick up boys, the subway trains was just straight graffiti. People were getting killed for their sneakers. People were getting killed that they didn't have enough money for the guys who were robbing them. I mean, it was just insane. Like, people really don't understand what New York was like. And what I picked up from the documentary was when the guy said, we weren't after the people with money, we were after their stuff.
After their
stuff.
And he
emphasized the word stuff. And I said, wow. I said, you know what? Because when I came up, as far as just like the 80s and 90s, this is all during the crack era, it was Predator Central in New York. And I mean, we clicked up heavy.
It was Predator Central.
We did a lot of we did a lot of grimy things, and we had to protect ourselves. And then some of us got into stuff, including myself, that we shouldn't have. But the idea was, you just really, it was a no man's land. And what I see the world turning to, especially now, because with the technology and the social media, is really disconnected us from the human connection that we have.
Yes, it has.
You heard some people in the documentary were saying, oh, for some of us it was fun, and you know, they went out to help and they were directing traffic and all of that. And then for the other people, it was no man's land. It was like The Walking Dead, but real life. Minus the zombies, it was just the drug addicts were probably the equivalent of the zombies, and then everybody else was just predators. Right. And what I see now, especially because of that emotional disconnect, is that the violence is going to be ratcheted up. There's going to be a whole lot of world star hip hop posts of people getting killed. Nobody's going to be doing much of anything to help each other except for those people, like you said, that have plans prior to everything hitting the fan.
Right.
So
I
really
question.
Think. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Is that Brother Scotty?
Yeah. Well, I have a question for you. The track, The Message, by Grandmaster mm-hmm. Flash and the Furious Five. That was accurate commentary, was it not?
Completely
without
accurate
a doubt.
With the burning down of the apartment buildings. That's what set up the empty lots for big business like A&S, Macy's. All of these places were put in place from the places that were burnt down. You could buy the lots that damn near pennies on the dollar because New York was just in a complete financial shambles. And then what you saw was through the late 70s, through the 80s, you had A&S, you had Albee Square Mall, you had all of this stuff that came up in Brooklyn, all over New York, but I remember Brooklyn specifically. And it was an incredible corporatization. So there was a big loss of local businesses where you might have had small mom and pop stores that were owned by black people, that were owned by other non-white people, and were also owned by white people, and all of that stuff was eradicated for the corporate style businesses. And now it seems like they're going through another purge again. So we're going to see this happen all over, you know, all over again. And yeah, the message couldn't have been more accurate, simply because New York was just completely corrupt, from the mayor all the way down to the police. You used to have police sniffing coke off their dashboards and going hog wild, robbing drug dealers, giving drugs from one drug dealer to another.
The fire department as well.
Oh yeah, they were a big part of the schemes to burn down apartment buildings. They were involved in it because they would take extra long to go to those areas where the houses were burning down. So it was all a racket where everybody was quote unquote greasing each other's palms. There's a great documentary called The 73rd that deals with the precinct in East New York, Brooklyn, in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
and it was considered the most deadly five square blocks in the country at that time because of the murder rate, the rape rate, and this is all during that specific time period. And they focus in on a particular corrupt cop in that precinct and his gang and the stuff that they were involved in. It is a mind blowing documentary, but it's called The 73rd. It's going to blow your mind when you see that. But it also shows you what New York looked like. It shows you the burnt out tenements. It looked like Lebanon. It was just bricks everywhere. You know, bullet-ridden buildings, just collapsed buildings.
It never recovered.
It was just horrific. Never recovered. Yep, it's still pretty much a shambles.
Yeah, you can see it still. It never. And you know, see, this is the thing that I remember and noticed about that whole thing is that the organized crime that was there, the organized in crime comes from the government.
Mm-hmm.
That's what organized crime is. The organized in crime comes from the government. And so this was it was determined, and the next one is going to be far worse because they've been conditioning and schooling everyone how they're supposed to act. This is why you've seen what you've seen on the news. This is why a lot of the vets, because they know everyone is going to act a certain way, and that's going to give them great, great leverage. And so this is purposeful. We need to know this and prepare for it. It's going to be far worse because the next one isn't just going to be geographically centered on one city. It's going to be regionally and hemisphere focused on the whole North, Central, and South America. So, it's already happening.
Oh, I was going to say, Dave, you really made me think of something, because if you look just in the last, 5 to 10 years, you have all these shows. You have The Strain, you have Walking Dead, you have Fear the Walking Dead, you have all of these movies coming out, and it's all about nothing but chaos, lights out, all hell breaking loose, and, you know, just zombies, hordes of so-called subhumans mm-hmm. that you can just kill at will. They're preparing you psychologically with that kind of so-called entertainment so that when everything hits the fan, you know exactly how to act. You go out with your gun and you start going on safari and you start shooting people. It's incredible how the conditioning starts so far in advance, because all of this stuff was plotted probably at least 100 years ago. A lot of us don't understand that there's foreplanning in the government. I remember it was in Hidden Colors 4 with Anthony Browder. He talked about speaking to a close friend of his who it made him aware of a think tank that forms in D.C. every other year, and they basically plot
where the different people will be placed, where the black people will be moved, where the low-income people will be moved, where the white people will be moved, and then they work on making sure that however they foreplan it, it turns out that way by the time that specific year that they plan to comes around. And he said that they plot up to 500 years in advance.
I can put him in.
So
this
was to tell you, this was planned a long time ago.
We're going to just go around and buzz the neighborhood.
Yeah, and that's the Council on Foreign Relations. Yep, they definitely do. And that is, man, great, great show, everyone. Listen, everyone, man, Roz, thank you for calling in. Brother Akeem, thank you for calling in. And my man Gary, thank you for calling in. You made this show so, so great. Much love and much respect. Right after Tando Radio Show, 10 minutes after Tando Radio Show, we're going to have the conference call for those of you that signed up for Trade Coin Club. If you didn't get the number, make sure you text me and I will get you the number. But before we get out of here real quick, I think Brother Davis just chimed in real quick. Then we're going to go to Brother Bragg and then we'll get out of here. Brother Davis, did you just chime in?
Yes, I did. I wanted y'all to know that this year we are in the era of agitation. This is the programming of dehumanization so that we will not communicate any ideas but just react. And if we don't understand that, we become a victim of a circumstance that we see coming. The sad part about that there is that most people don't see with the same vision. I just wanted to add that, brothers. Great show, Dave.
Thank you, brother Davis. So, so true. So, so true. So we have to be prepared for it, and we have to resonate differently. And there is a process. Everything has a process that we have to, endure and respect. So, Brother Bragg, if you want to chime in before we get out of here, we got 2 minutes. Go ahead and do it, and then you can chime us out. If you wanted to give any of your thoughts to it all, we'd greatly appreciate it.
Just peace, Dave. Great show. I sat back and just maxed out, man. Great show.
Much love, much respect. Thank you, Brother Bragg. All right, everyone, we're getting ready to get out of here. It's never goodbye. As always, we'll see you later. And before you ask for a fortune, make sure to give one away. Brother Bragg, if you would chime us out. Much love, much respect. Peace.
Peace.
Peace.